Welcome to Local Licks. My name is Pat McLaughlin, and our special guest for the second week in a row is composer and producer Bruce Lowe.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your loving and your dirty loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby. Tell me maybe that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die.
Hello, Pat.
Welcome back, buddy.
Hey, good to see you again.
Welcome back. It's just like it was moments ago.
Right, exactly.
Everybody, thanks if you're not getting our humor here, Bruce, who did a beautiful job, and if you missed it, go online and listen to our podcast on the various stations that carry Local Licks on Remedy Radio, where he has talked about his days in Whitehall. He is his intelligent ideas way ahead of their time with psychoacoustics, as well as trying to make computers talk, which led his knowledge led him to Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. How am I doing?
Yeah, you're doing fabulous.
Stevie Wonder used him on incredible, important albums and introduced him to Michael Jackson. He did an incredible amount of work with Michael Jackson, and Lionel Richie's name came up occasionally in that, and Quincy Jones. And then towards the end of last segment, you would hear, if you go on our podcast, that he was working with Paul McCartney in the Bahamas for the some of the songs with Stevie Wonder that came off the Tug of War
album. Yes, Tug of War.
Tug of War album. And we brought you in out of left field, but there's you guys think my show is slung together? It's not. We brought you in with Buddy Holly, and particularly the song That'll Be the Day, because, mentioning Paul McCartney, you're working on projects right now about this movie. And you have an extensive video history we're going to try to touch on now. So let's talk about the That'll Be the Day film and whatever Hal McCartney might be in this story.
Sounds great. And by the way, love your show, Pat.
Oh, thank you very much. Wow.
And again, wow. I just can't tell you enough. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Hometown.
Hometown, man. Yeah, Whitehall, Ohio. Literally grew up a block and a half from where you went to high school. What street did you live on before we get into this?
Well, Beach Creek.
Beach Creek, okay.
And then right after 1972, moved to Worthington, Ohio.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
Off Park Road.
Off of Park Road. Okay, really cool. Yeah.
But that was English Village.
Is that right?
Yeah.
See, everybody? This man really is from Columbus area. So, and he knows some people. Go ahead, if you will.
Okay. So, want me to talk about the feature films, maybe, and the visual side of things?
I would really like that, because I think people are going to be just amazed at who you've worked and what projects you've been a part of.
Well, I love this part of it, because it kind of, when I started out working with Stevie Wonder, we were actually, Steve wrote and composed for that, The Secret Life of Plants.
Yes.
So as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old starting out, then I learned how to make films with music by doing The Secret Life of Plants. So consequently, as I started getting off a retainer after several years with Stevie Wonder on retainer, and we still do stuff, but not on an everyday basis now.
Right.
And so I started doing feature films, and instead of being the producer, this and that, I was became the full composer.
Wow.
So then I started doing a bunch of them. But then there was this thing that happened, and that was Andre Crouch called me, the king of gospel music. At this time, he is number one in the world in gospel music. So he asked me to work with him, And I was thinking, man, this is going to be a little anticlimactic after working with the others and how dead wrong I was. It was the people in the wheelchairs were up dancing. It was unbelievable. And I knew that I actually, maybe it wasn't the from a business standpoint initially, right, as much as someone that we've talked about earlier, but what it was is an unbelievable lifetime experience of understanding. And then it segued into, we kind of hit pay dirt in the sense of we got a thing together, which was gospel music into rock, into pop, into metal, into R&B, and even into hip hop. So we started doing a record called Q by Quincy Jones, okay, back on the block.
All right.
And it was the beginning days of hip hop and rap. And we had a bunch of guest rappers. Most people would know different ones of them, from Ice-T to some of, on and on.
Yeah.
And we put gospel music over top of that. Now, that was unheard of back in those days.
We're in the middle 80s to...
The middle 80s, yeah. Yes. Back on the block. And then, so we thought we had something going here. So, and I had all these clients. Andre had all these clients. And so here, I had already been working with Elton John.
Okay.
Since the beginning of time, of being out there, because I had a guru mentor, Bob Monaco, who was teaching me how to actually professionally produce records.
Oh, wow.
He had just come off of winning the Record of the Year and the Producer of the Year Grammys for Chaka Khan and Rufus's Tell Me Something Good.
Okay.
And now Stevie Wonder wrote the song. And so,
whoa, that just skirted past my lifetime. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, go on.
And so all these names then come together. Bob heard about me and he said, Bruce, if you work with me on some of this stuff, I'll let you be associate producer. And I ate it up. And so he taught me, and then I became co-producer. And then with his blessings, he pushed me into being the producer on a lot of these projects. Well, he brought Elton John to me through Teldec Records, Germany. Elton was a part of it somehow. I think he had an investment in Teldec, but
okay,
I couldn't swear that. But I'm pretty sure he did, because he had a lot of artists that he would write songs, and often with Bernie Taupin, and then send them to me from Germany. He'd call on the phone and then play on the phone machine and his new songs. And so then at that point, I would translate them and produce the records for his artists, who would then fly to L.A. and we would record those. That segued into The Lion King.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, because Elton and I were friends. Now, Hans Zimmer did the orchestration, but with Andre Crouch, we started doing gospel things with Man in the Mirror, with Michael Jackson, on and on, a lot of Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones. Then we went to Madonna with Like a Prayer and started doing a bunch of that kind of stuff. And
you worked with Madonna.
Sure did.
Keep
absolutely
going.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
So we figured we had something going.
Yeah.
And so we got a call from Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
And Spielberg.
Name dropper. go ahead.
And he was with Quincy Jones, and they called and asked us if we'd be interested in working on this new movie that Spielberg was making called The Color Purple. And so we absolutely said yes. And Quincy says, you guys got to understand, I'm scoring that thing and I'm going to get most of the money. And we said, we don't care. We're in. And so it was priceless. Steven Spielberg taught me so much about the pacing of music, the rhythmic motion, and the visual psychological part of the visual and the eyes and human behavior as a result, and the marriage of the music. Because Andre was like Stevie, late with everything all the time.
Okay.
Steven had me as the conduit and would say, Bruce, are you guys done? Well, I've got to shoot this scene. And it's going to have vocals in a church scene, Tata Vega being the vocalist on it, which actually we were nominated for Oscar.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't win, and also the movie of the year and that kind of thing.
Oh, it was up for 14. It was that should have won a few awards. It didn't.
Exactly.
That's a shame.
So we ended up trying to deliver, and Steven said, listen, I got to pace these scenes. I learned that if you watch his movies, because John Williams is the main composer usually.
Always.
And so we were that exception with The Color Purple, but if you look at his movies, you'll see his success. They're paced to a point that other directors just some are doing, but not too many.
I think pace is so important. Now, I need to go to commercials, so I'm going to hold to come back, and I want to talk about The Lion King, too.
Okay.
My God. Everybody, Bruce Lowe, overwhelming career here on Local Licks. We'll be right back. Everybody to Local Licks, part of the Remedy Radio Network, which I'm very now proud to tell everybody, if you didn't hear in last week's show, that we've been picked up by that wonderful network, and hopefully Local Licks will start being syndicated around the state of Ohio and part of the region, and who knows where it will go after that. With guests like Bruce Lowe in the room, it's probably going to be worldwide and maybe even show up in other planets, because I've never been in an interview where it's so out of the world incredible as you've had, and so humble about it, too.
Well, thank you, Pat. Oh, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah.
I am grateful.
Listen, we entered in with the circle of life from the movie The Lion King and your work with Elton John, and I do want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And I also want to make sure that we don't lose sight, because we opened the show with That'll Be the Day, and we never told anybody about the project you're working on, Paul McCartney. And I'm going to get that on, everybody. Trust me. But I want you all out there to listen to some of the TV shows and or some of the other movies that you've been a part of. And just maybe just I may jump in and ask a quick question, but you just keep rattling them off. And my first one is Mork and Mindy.
That was the start of television for me.
Yeah.
And so working on that was a live show. And so got to know everybody. Yeah. Robin Williams was a gem.
Yeah.
Just an absolutely.
Terribly missed.
And the kids loved him. The adults loved him. He was the epitome of excellence as a comedian. And what he just blew my mind is how do you come up with that
stuff? I don't know how you do it either. It's just some strange blessing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was a freak thing. No question about it. And then, so we're doing this, and we'd have breaks during the live performances. And he would go out in the audience and just do the wittiest things with the it was totally impromptu, and that's where people like us, being around a fair amount of this stuff, knew this dude's genius.
Yeah.
And so then he decides to try and top himself being in Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
And of course all the people that were in it, but then he brought in Jonathan Winters,
which is his idol.
Absolutely.
And if you remember, tied to Central Ohio.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's another reason I bring it up.
Yeah.
Jonathan Winters Just, you couldn't even imagine you weren't on a different planet with right. these two guys.
And you're in the room with them every day?
I'm doing the music. We're doing music live.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. So there were like five of us in the band. And, you know, we had it all scheduled out and so on. But these guys, every time there was a break, and they would just be cut-ups. And you say, no, they didn't say that. And they kept it clean, which was pretty unusual and appreciated for that you know, audience. But then those two would go out, and you'd wonder how they couldn't get hurt because they'd be standing on top of the rails and doing things. But then they'd see kids, and they just gravitated, and just the kids loved them. But they treated everybody with respect, and then they'd just come up with impromptu after impromptu. Consequently, what I witnessed there was the ability for Robin Williams contractually, and then he goes on to be in all these films.
Yeah.
He's got he had clauses in his films that said he had the right to improvise into that was unheard of at that time. Now there's a few more people that they can say because you've got millions and millions of dollars, possibly hundreds of millions on the line.
Yeah.
And you don't want actors improvising.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Robin Williams could.
Wow. Hey, how about other TV shows and movies, please?
Well, about 10 years ago, I signed to Warner Brothers Television.
Okay.
And so I generally, for then the last 10 years, have had somewhere between 15 to 17 shows airing at any given time.
Think about that.
So right now, I don't really know if it's 15, 17 or something like that at this point.
Yeah.
But shows like Ellen let me see, Crime Watch, Bachelor, Lopez Tonight, CNN, Judge Mathis, Extra TMZ.
Now, are you providing the soundtracks?
Yes, the cues and the music that goes in between.
Okay.
Ellen's doing this thing. I'm not sure exactly. It's interesting to me because I can't catch the part that she has this track, a cue, that I wrote called Bigfoot.
Okay.
And it has this march, like, boom, boom. And and it's classical, and it's big. It's orchestrated and the whole thing. And she's been playing it for 8 years. And the interesting thing, and I hope she doesn't get mad at me, but I don't know what segment it is. I just know she's doing it because I can tell from the royalties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I got to figure that out. Anyway, it goes on and then ended up doing cartoons even. So from Powerpuff Girls, raising my daughter, here's used to watch them as a little baby.
Wow.
And here, and I just started maybe 5 years ago. Doing that, and it's been on forever, Mad TV or Animal Planet and so on. So,
but would you say between the Color Purple and The Lion King, those are your two true gems?
Well, it's a little tough to answer, Pat, but I'll try my best.
Okay.
So
that's like choosing your favorite child, isn't it?
It pretty much is. They're both unbelievable films, and I learned immensely, but I would say that the widest demographics for would be The Lion King.
Yeah.
That would be because the kid, you got the kids and the adult story and that kind of a thing. But now The Color Purple also was Oscar nominated and so on. So
and at Broadway. But they're both on Broadway.
And they're both on Broadway.
Both go national tours.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Jeez.
So it's a little tough and all of that. Probably Hans Zimmer was doing the score on The Lion King, whereas Elton John would send Andre Crouch and I the songs. He'd write them. And after he would write them, we'd break them down and say, what would you do? And the arrangement, the genius behind that, after Elton wrote those songs. And it was Tim Rice who wrote the lyrical side of that.
Okay, yeah, sure, yeah.
And so they would give them to us, and the genius behind that was Andre. But Andre and I were on a nod system. We didn't need to use rhetoric to communicate. And, well, the same thing with Stevie Wonder. But so what happened was I had to translate his craziness, and I mean that in a good way because he was this genius mind.
Right.
And then I had to be the glue. So then Elton was just say, hey, you guys know what you're doing and leave us alone. He was great vibes with the whole thing. But we would then bring in that African vibe. We'd ship some, or rather – the authenticity of the African side of things, then we'd bring in the cream of the crop, vocalists down.
The best players.
From Africa, from South Africa.
Wow.
And it was just a treat. And there we go.
I mean, that you could have hung your hat just on that, Bruce. Unbelievable. Well, look, we're going to have to go to do some news, and we got some bills to pay, of course. And when we come back, I got to make sure we talk about this project you're working on with Paul McCartney.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get there.
And everybody, you are listening to Local Licks with my guest, Bruce Lowe.
Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata. Ain't no passing craze.
It means no worries for the rest of your days.
It's our problem-free philosophy.
Hakuna Matata.
Why, when he was a young warthog...
Welcome back to Local Licks. I'm Pat McLaughlin of The Circle, and also, of course, in the Ohio marketplace, the Gas Pump Jockeys. I will tell you that Bruce Lowe, our guest, we're in part two. So if you missed last week's show for some reason, you do want to go online and hear his early days in Whitehall and all the neat things with Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones and Madonna. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And we also mentioned Paul McCartney two or three times in this interview. And after we compliment you on that beautiful piece of work that you and Andre Crouch wrote, Mercy.
Thank you.
Which everybody is a Grammy Award winner, and I'm going to brag on him. He's got 5 Grammy Awards. All just amazing. All working with Andre Crouch.
Yes, exactly.
So here's the deal. We can't leave this audience wondering about the Paul McCartney story. So okay, with your permission, I'm going to ask you to tell the That'll Be the Day movie story, which we were going to tell 2 segments ago.
Right.
And then I want to spend a lot of time in the rest of the segment talking about Andre Crouch. And if it bleeds into the last segment,
okay,
that's really cool because he's so important to you.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm in pre-production right now on a feature film called That'll Be the Day. So it's a little premature to promote that exactly right now, but it got McCartney and myself reacquainted with the whole project because Paul McCartney owns the publishing on many of Buddy Holly's songs.
He's a genius when it came to buying up content.
Absolutely. He has one of the biggest and finest money-making music catalogs on earth,
yes.
McCartney.
Back to your topic.
MPL is the name of his company. So his favorite, aside from himself, person who makes him the most money and so on, is Buddy Holly.
Okay.
Buddy Holly was the type of guy, Elvis loved him, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, started all kinds of stuff and was emulated. So then McCartney would start doing That'll Be the Day. So we've reacquainted because we had to get the business together.
Sure.
In regards for a publishing split with BMG or there's all kinds of other things that we had to work out on the deals
on
and
the
negotiations.
Legal side.
Yes.
Yeah.
In order to do it. So it's been a reacquaintance and fun and then
so
reminiscing
nice.
And, you know, a little bit of wrestling type thing. Not like we used to do. But
well, we're not spring chickens anymore.
Right. So that kind of thing. And so we also are trying to get the best deal we can for the songs.
And so this movie's got lots of big names from the day.
Well, that's because of Maria Elena Hawley, Buddy's widow, and then Steve Easley, who takes care of the whole estate and is instrumental in selling to them. So they end up getting from Peter Asher together, one of the biggest producers on earth ever.
Yep.
And then you get Jimmy Page, and you get Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and the Robert Plant. So they did a documentary, which we wanted to, we're behind time on the movie itself.
Okay.
But we wanted the movie to follow the documentary with all these people who Buddy Holly was their
influence.
Absolutely.
Man.
And so that is right now out in England with all the guys from, I left out like Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey.
Oh, God.
So you get all those standard people that were around during that time. Of course, all of the Beatles and any, so you get McCartney and Ringo.
Yeah.
They're still living and promoting it. So that is the kind of thing that's going on and we're following on.
And that's on the near horizon.
Yes, that will be as early as next year.
Okay.
And could be possibly the next year. Well, we're officially in pre-production.
And so, Local Looks, everybody out there, please pay attention to that film when it does come out, because it's obviously going to be a good one to catch in. And Bruce has got a huge hand in that. Now, thank you, everybody out there, for your patience on that story. I do want to talk about Andre Crouch. It's big in my notes. He is the most significant person, I think, and I could be dead wrong, because all these other people.
No, you're right.
That, but my impressions are that you and he have the best of all the rapport on, and 5 Grammys is not too shabby, buddy, with him.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Now, I designed several records for him, about 4 records, and then we won 5 Grammys as a result.
Tell everybody who he is, for those that don't know.
Andre Crouch, when I started working with him, it was the biggest gospel star on earth, hands down. Okay. And so, consequently, what happened was we were able to introduce this thing called synthesizers into gospel music. It was unheard of back in the days. This was in the mid-80s at this point.
Yeah.
And coming off of working with Stevie Wonder and Andre asking me to work with him, I thought it might be anticlimactic, and absolutely it was the opposite.
Wow.
And because this guy was genius. But what happened was I learned his technique of building the songs that this just genius that would come out. And no matter how many times, 150 times a day listening to these songs, because we're making them. But here's the method. And what you have to do is visualize. If you have to close your eyes, go ahead, because we're talking about sound. But look at it this way. You plant a seed. And we're planting. Let's plant a rose seed in the ground.
Okay.
And you cultivate that dirt, the seed, and you're hearing the music starting out that way. Then the stem starts to grow. And then as the stem grows, the music gets a little bigger also. And you picture that, and the gospel choir's coming in with the arrangement, along with, of course, the state-of-the-art musicians playing on everything. And then what happens is you have a tight bud on that flower. So you hear that tight bud in the arrangement. Then you feel and hear that flower bloom through his things. And it's just the biggest crescendos or the biggest punch lines. And then he'll bring you down like a parachute and just drop you off softly. Or it's just gives me just now, no matter what kind of music you're into, it could be heavy metal, it could be country, it could be gospel, R&B, rap, whatever. It's totally appropriate for 100% of those types of music. And consequently, Andre and I found a niche. Madonna wanted that. She said, give me some. So we do Like a Prayer.
Yeah.
Here it is on The Lion King. So what I'm doing is a full circle of all of these projects. Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones, Steven Spielberg. There's the common denominator in the commercialism of a niche that we had marketed or cornered a market on, so to speak. And I was able to translate Andre's genius, so to speak. I'm giving him all the credit for that. And bring it down to the ability for everybody to enjoy it type of a thing. And here, so 18 years. He also was married my wife and I, because of course he's a full pastor. And
I didn't know that. What a lovely touch.
Yeah.
Wow.
And if you go to my website on at cinemashowmusic.com,
okay,
you'll be able to see pictures of Andre and all and Tina and I, my wife Tina, getting married. So, and it's kind of been a family affair.
Yeah.
When I couldn't go to the session because we just had babies, then Andre'd say, "No, I'm babysitting them." So he'd babysit my son, who's now 27, and my daughter, who's 23, Emily and Jonathan. And then he'd back before either were born, we flew him up to Tahoe to marry us. And that was during this whole thing. So not only friends, not only was he a genius, but I just love the man dearly. And when he passed about 2 years ago,
yeah,
I've never seen a party, a send-off party like this, hands down. And then Stevie comes in and he plays and sends Andre out. We have Yolanda Adams playing. We're all just involved in the songs that were amazing. The Winans, just a state-of-the-art musicians.
Yeah.
It was
all
a three-day party.
No kidding.
And I mean, all day, and we're all stomping. It was unbelievable. So Andre Crouch was the common with that. 18 years of designing records for him, and that was it.
We're going to do his memory some honor here. We're going to end this segment with another one of your Grammy-winning songs. And that was a pretty tough loss for you.
Absolutely. It was terrible.
Yeah. Sorry for that one. That's a tough one to have to endure.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to end with one of your songs, and then I think, out of respect, we'll come back in this last segment. We're going to talk a lot about your views of music, how it can heal. There's all sorts of things that we're going to dedicate the entire last segment to. Everybody, this is Bruce Lowe of Los Angeles, California, but originally from Whitehall, Ohio. Lived just up the street from me. With an incredible story that you're getting right here on Local Lowe's.
When I was a child, I sang a song. Yes, Jesus loves me. That was years ago and now I'm grown. Yes, Jesus loves me. The city where I live, so many things have changed. They say nothing ever stays the same. The grass is brown, many buildings.
Everybody, welcome back to our final segment with Bruce Lowe, who has been so gracious to give us not only last week's show, but this week's show. And the stories have been unbelievable. These will all be posted on the website. So if you want to rehear them again, and particularly with this section that we're about to talk about, by all means, go to our websites and just look up Local Licks. And what we're going to do now, and I want to let you know that for those that didn't hear last week, Bob Oxendorf from the Hypnotics, among, good Lord, how many bands, Bob, have you been in? You could put your resume on a roll of Bounty towels. And is here, and he helped us get Bruce here from L.A. for this interview. And the two of them have really been strong believers in the power of music, particularly in the arena of health. Plus, your work with the United Nations. There's a lot to cover here, and I'm going to just kind of inch into this and let you guys start to run with the balls. But I wanted you all to know that Bob Oxendorf, who also has an interview on Local Licks, is in the room and may want to share this rather important information. So, Bruce, may I ask you to start?
Absolutely. Well, so Both sections, or segments rather,
yeah,
that we have done. Now there's a full circle. And the full circle comes on around. So after working with so many different artists and so on, also since a kid, we're talking elementary school, I started studying psychoacoustics. And I was always interested in music being involved with healing itself. We know it can be used in soothing and also, I hate to say it, but torture.
Okay.
And it is used for those purposes. But that's, let's shove that aside.
Okay.
We're talking about healing here. And before maybe 10 years ago, we could not necessarily scientifically prove that it was real.
But you knew all along, didn't you?
Absolutely, yeah, I knew all
along. That's what I thought.
There wasn't a granule of doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
So now what we have found, for example, I'll give you one of many, and so I don't bore you to tears with it, but 100,000 hertz. Let's talk about healing cancer.
Okay.
64%. I can't rattle off all the stats, and but there are three different kinds of cancers. There is 64% healing rate with absolutely no pain or side effects with sound, pulverizing the cancer cells at the frequency of 100,000 hertz to 300,000 hertz. That is not opinion, and that is easily found on the internet and so on of higher education and scientific places that can do that. Well, it's kind of coming to a head. I had the two main dreams that would happen. My main friend that's been there since the early days, Bob Oxendorf, is totally involved with this. And it's called Music Has Healing Power. It's my foundation that I founded a year or two ago.
Roughly 2 years, yes.
Okay. And David Atmore is my CEO of Cinema Show Music, and he's been with me tearing it apart, breaking it down, making sure that Sheena Sebring with the all the website and so on is taken care of. Bob is the East Coast, so to speak. I know it's the eastern part of the Midwest.
This side of the Mississippi, Bob?
Yeah. I'd say this side of the Mississippi would be fair.
Okay.
And so he's taking care of this side of it. So we've joined forces in the sense of how can we help people? And taking all of this information and putting it together and creating the most important. That is what I have gathered through all of my endeavors and all of the humble successes and et cetera, is Music Has Healing Power. If anybody wants to go to our website, it is called, all one word, musichashealingpower.org.
Do it again, please.
Musichashealingpower.org.
All right.
Now, if you're from the Columbus area, Bob, can they give you a call if they wanted to?
Absolutely. The best number is 614-577-1003, or Bruce and I communicate frequently or daily as needed. But as what you'll find out about this, and I have a special interest about how the benefits of music, especially with people who have Alzheimer's and dementia. And I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen videos of people who haven't spoken a word for years. And when music is played, especially from their era when they were active, it brightens them up. It has a positive effect. I have a loved one who's in very serious condition. And what I've seen is someone who doesn't talk. And when music is played, you can get verbalization that is not normally there.
Really?
That's just one small aspect of this. But it brightens people's spirits, and I think music should always be played in all of nursing homes, in hospital rooms, and it should be music that was from their active era.
Right.
And it does make a difference.
Now, that's for the spirit, and but I'm also, and I'm not minimizing that, Bob, that's really important. But the physical aspect of it that you just brought up about cancer,
yes,
is stunning information.
Yeah, and from both a mental illness, physical illness, regardless, it is scientifically, once again, it's a neurological thing. So what happens is with sound waves, no matter if it's the music you love, the music you can't hear because it's too high frequency or too low frequency, is still affecting your neurological system. That makes you move. That makes you go to work. That makes you have to go to the bathroom every move you make. And interestingly enough, comatose is no exception. And that's also provable. So what we're doing then is creating people that play, that can see and have the soulfulness, the feeling of music for the pediatrics oncology, for example, back to the physiology part of it. My daughter Emily and I, and my son Jonathan and I, through my wife Tina, who is a RN forever and runs floors at hospitals and that kind of stuff. So what happens is we go and visit the pediatrics oncology every single time this music that we'll bring works, both simultaneously, mentally and physically. There's no question about it. And the family members recognize it. And just if it's the joy during their time going through the journey, whether they make it or not. And it is a tough thing to deal with because several of them do not. But what we know is we bring them through that journey and give them some joy during that time and some peace and so on. So people that would go to different hospitals to play, we want you to get a hold of us, please. Okay. People that want to donate instruments, that want to donate money, please go to our website, musichashealingpower.org, and consider it. Okay. The gift of music, no matter how good you are, going and sitting next to a child or an adult, elderly, middle-aged, you watch what happens to yourself when you're doing it. The joy you will leave with. Well, just you'll be telling that story for the rest of your life to your kids.
I love your passion.
Thanks.
Man. Very, very important, everybody, that you go out and look at his website and the business's website. And you may be uncovering something that's so important right now that I have a brain that's not as capable of managing what you've just delivered to me. It's really impressive.
Well,
let's hope you keep it up.
We will.
We want to thank you, though, for everything you've done in the past. Your music contributions, somewhat unsung, has really been incredible. And your presence on Local Licks is, I'm as grateful as I can be. I told you coming in, I was very nervous. You're one of the few people that really had me worked up coming in here.
Oh, bad.
And, but I've learned I've got a new friend. I'm even counting Oxendorf in that new friend. No, he and I go back a ways. But I do want to thank you for coming on Local Licks.
It's really a pleasure, and there was no reason to be nervous.
Well,
so
thank you.
We've been getting
much.
Along great. I think it's fabulous, and I will tell you, I'm truly honored. Oh. Hometown, I was nervous too, because ironically enough, no matter how many people it is, I could be playing to 100,000 people. Today, it's my hometown.
Yeah.
And I am honored with the opportunity to be here with you, Pat.
As
thank
we
you
are too.
That.
From Whitehall, Ohio, through Los Angeles, California, Bruce Lowe, everybody, and I'm Pat McLaughlin of The Circle. And of the Gas Pump Jockeys on Remedy Radio, you've been listening to Local Licks.